Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on the program, Dan Friedel and I report about recent protests by professional athletes. Then, Ashley Thompson and I take you to another national park, this one in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. And we close the show with the final part of The Diamond Lens, a story by American writer FitzJames O'Brien.
The National Football League opens its season in cities across the United States this weekend. Fans will be cheering for their favorite teams and players during games Sunday and Monday. But many people will also be paying attention to what happens before the game.
America's national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, is played before many sporting events in the U.S. This has been the case for about 100 years. In most cases, fans and players stand up, look toward the flag, and sing the words to the song. But recently, one player has not done that.
Colin Kaepernick is a quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. Kaepernick did not stand for the anthem before the San Francisco game on August 26th. The game was an exhibition. The results do not count toward the team's standings.
Colin Kaepernick said he chose not to stand as protest. He said he was objecting to the way Black people and people of color are treated in the United States. He spoke about police killings of unarmed African Americans. He said, "There are bodies in the street," and "people getting away with murder." There was mixed public reaction to Kaepernick's action. The Associated Press news agency talked to two fans at a game the following week. The 49ers were playing the San Diego Chargers.
Leo Uzcategui is a Navy veteran. He was not happy to see Kaepernick. Uzcategui said he understood Kaepernick's right to express his views, but he objected to the way the athlete did so. Uzcategui told the AP, "I was in the Navy, and I saw men and women bleed and die for this flag. You don't sit during the national anthem. That is not the way to do it." Another fan, Dominique Banks, asked Kaepernick to sign a shirt she had. "I told him I appreciate what he is standing up for," Banks said. "Most of the people I talk to say the same thing. I don't like that he is sitting during the national anthem, but I appreciate what he is standing for," she said.
The news media also asked President Barack Obama about Kaepernick. "I think he cares about some real legitimate issues that have to be talked about," Obama said. "And if nothing else, what he's done is he's generated more conversation around some topics that need to be talked about. Sometimes it's messy, but it's the way democracy works." Other NFL players and athletes in other sports said they support Kaepernick. Megan Rapinoe is a soccer player and a member of the USA women's soccer team. She did not stand for the national anthem before her team's game on September 4th. Rapinoe said she wanted to show support for Kaepernick. She also said that she feels her personal liberties are not always protected because she is gay.
Is Kaepernick's protest just one part of a trend? It seems athletes might be speaking more freely about social issues than in recent years. On the final day of the Rio de Janeiro Olympic Games, Ethiopian runner Feyisa Lilesa won a silver medal in the marathon. As he crossed the finish line, he crossed his arms just above his head to make the shape of an X. Lilesa was protesting the Ethiopian government's killing of Oromo people. Human Rights Watch says more than 400 Oromo activists were killed last year. The Oromo had used the sign during protests. The Ethiopian government says Human Rights Watch inflated the number of dead. Lilesa has told reporters he will be punished if he returns home to Ethiopia. That country's government has said he would be treated like a hero.
American basketball stars LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Paul recently spoke about the subject of athlete protest. They said professional athletes should speak when they see something about society they do not like. "We all have to do better," James said. Ricky Jean-Francois is an NFL player for the Washington Redskins. He told VOA that he agreed. Athletes should not stay silent.
Each and every other day we're talking about change, but if nobody's voicing their opinion or no one is taking action, we can scream that each and every other day and nothing to be done. So now, as you can see, slowly but surely things are changing, things are being brought to attention, topics are not being washed away no more. Now they're here. So hopefully as time goes on, things will change with that.
All of Kaepernick's protests came during exhibition games. Many people are curious what will happen before San Francisco's first game of the new season on Monday night. Recent news reports say that players from another NFL team are considering a protest. Jeremy Lane, a player for the Seattle Seahawks, did not stand during the anthem before his team's last game. Seattle plays Sunday. Bobby Wagner is a Seattle player. Wagner told reporters in Seattle all of the players would do something together. "The world needs to see people coming together versus being individuals," Wagner said.
Kaepernick said he would give money to human rights groups. He promised $1 million of his earnings this season. He also said he would donate the money that comes from the sales of shirts with his name. Late in the week, San Francisco 49ers owner Jed York said the team would also donate $1 million to two local organizations. They work on solving the racial and economic inequality in the area.
This week on our national parks journey, we visit a land of giants in California's Sierra Nevada Mountains. Welcome to Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Park. The park gets its name from the area's ancient sequoia trees. Sequoia National Park's forests are thick with giant sequoias. Many of the trees are several thousand years old. The largest is called General Sherman. It is named after a U.S. general in the Civil War, William Tecumseh Sherman. The tree is 31 meters around. It stands almost 84 meters tall, and it continues to grow. It sits within the park's giant forest. The forest is home to over 8,000 sequoia trees. General Sherman is more than 2,200 years old. It is the world's largest tree in terms of the amount of wood it contains. The National Park Service says if the tree were cut down, it would provide a huge amount of wood construction planks. It says if they were laid end to end, they would stretch for almost 200 kilometers.
In the late 1800s, people grew concerned about logging activity in the area. They sought to protect the giant sequoias from being cut down for wood. One of those people was Walter Fry. In 1888, he came to the Sierra Nevada Mountains as a logger himself. He spent 5 days with a team of loggers trying to take down a single giant sequoia tree. Fry then decided to count the tree's rings to learn its age. The answer shocked and saddened him. The tree they had cut down was more than 3,200 years old. He and his team of loggers had ended thousands of years of growth. The experience led Fry to change jobs. He became a naturalist. He studied the trees and measured the size of fallen sequoias. He also joined the fight to protect them from future loggers. When a petition was created to urge Congress to create a national park in the area, Fry was the third person to sign it. Sequoia National Park was established on September 25, 1890. It became the country's second national park after Yellowstone.
In 1940, Congress established another park near Sequoia, Kings Canyon. It and Sequoia National Park have been managed together since 1943. Kings Canyon is home to the deepest canyon in the United States, as well as a famous sequoia forest called Grant Grove. Here, you will find the world's second biggest tree, the General Grant Tree. It is over 3,000 years old. Along with the world's biggest trees, the area is also home to one of America's highest peaks, Mount Whitney. It measures 4,414 meters. It lies in the eastern part of Sequoia National Park. While many visitors travel here to witness the giant sequoias, some visitors also come here to climb Mount Whitney. Many hikers experience altitude sickness while trying to reach the top. More than 30,000 people try to climb Mount Whitney each year. Only about 10,000 reach the top.
Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Park is home to a richly diverse animal world. More than 300 species of wildlife live in the park. Mammals include the tiny white-footed mouse, the gray fox, and the bobcat. Black bears are also common. Bird species include the California quail, the northern owl, and the acorn woodpecker. There are also many animals that swim, slither, hop, or crawl. Visitors might see a northern Pacific tree frog, a western pond turtle, or the colorful rainbow trout. If you are lucky, you will not run into one of the park's poisonous wild rattlesnakes. But do not let bears and snakes scare you away. Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Park is too extraordinary to miss. The words of the late naturalist John Muir perfectly describe a visit to this great park. Nature's peace will flow into you as sunshine flows into trees. Now, the second part of The Diamond Lens by Fitzjames O'Brien.
When I was a child, someone gave me a microscope. I spent hours looking through that microscope, exploring nature's tiny secrets. As I grew up, I became more interested in my microscope than in people. When I was 20 years old, my parents sent me to New York City to study medicine. I never went to any of my classes. Instead, I spent all my time and a lot of my money trying to build the perfect microscope. I wanted to make a powerful lens that would let me see even the smallest parts of life. But all my experiments failed. Then, one day, I met a young man who lived in the apartment above mine. Jules Simon told me about a woman who could speak to the dead. When I visited Madame Volpe's, she let me speak to the spirit of the man who invented the microscope. The spirit of Anton Leeuwenhoek told me how to make a perfect lens from a diamond of 140 carats. But where could I find a diamond that big? When I returned home, I went to Simon's apartment. He was surprised to see me and tried to hide a small object in his pocket. I wanted to discover what it was, so I brought 2 bottles of wine to his apartment. We began to drink. By the time we had finished the first bottle, Simon was very drunk. "Simon, I know you have a secret. Why don't you tell me about it?" Something in my voice must have made him feel safe. He made me promise to keep his secret. Then he took a small box from his pocket. When he opened it, I saw a large diamond shaped like a rose. A pure white light seemed to come from deep inside the diamond. Simon told me he had stolen the diamond from a man in South America. He said it weighed exactly 140 carats. Excitement shook my body. I could not believe my luck. On the same evening that the spirit of Leeuwenhoek tells me the secret of the perfect lens, I find the diamond I need to create it. I decided to steal Simon's treasure. I sat across the table from him as he drank another glass of wine. I knew I could not simply steal the diamond. Simon would call the police. There was only one way to get the diamond. I had to kill Simon. Everything I needed to murder Simon was right there in his apartment. A bottle full of sleeping powder was on a table near his bed. A long, thin knife lay on the table. Simon was so busy looking at his diamond that I was able to put the drug in his glass quite easily. He fell asleep in 15 minutes. I put his diamond in my pocket and carried Simon to the bed. I wanted to make the police think Simon had killed himself. I picked up Simon's long, thin knife and stared down at him. I tried to imagine exactly how the knife would enter Simon's heart if he were holding the knife himself. I pushed the knife deep into his heart. I heard a sound come from his throat, like the bursting of a large bubble. His body moved, and his right hand grabbed the handle of the knife. He must have died immediately. I washed our glasses and took the two wine bottles away with me. I left the lights on, closed the door, and went back to my apartment. Simon's death was not discovered until 3 o'clock the next day. One of the neighbors knocked at his door, and when there was no answer, she called the police. They discovered Simon's body on the bed. The police questioned everyone, but they did not learn the truth. The police finally decided Jules Simon had killed himself, and soon everyone forgot about him. I had committed the perfect crime. For 3 months after Simon's death, I worked day and night on my diamond lens. At last, the lens was done. My hands shook as I put a drop of water on a piece of glass. Carefully, I added some oil to the water to prevent it from drying. I turned on a strong light under the glass and looked through the diamond lens. For a moment, I saw nothing in that drop of water, and then I saw a pure white light. Carefully, I moved the lens of my microscope closer to the drop of water. Slowly, the white light began to change. It began to form shapes. I could see clouds and wonderful trees and flowers. These plants were the most unusual colors, bright reds, greens, purples, as well as silver and gold. The branches of these trees moved slowly in a soft wind. Everywhere I looked, I could see fruits and flowers of 1,000 different colors. How strange, I thought, that this beautiful place has no animal life in it. Then I saw something moving slowly among the brightly colored trees and bushes. The branches of a purple and silver bush were gently pushed aside, and there, before my eye, stood the most beautiful woman I had ever seen. She was perfect. Pink skin, large blue eyes, and long golden hair that fell over her shoulders to her knees. She stepped away from the rainbow-colored trees. Like a flower floating on water, she drifted through the air. Watching her move was like listening to the sound of tiny bells ringing in the wind. She went to the rainbow-colored trees and looked up at one of them. The tree moved one of its branches that was full of fruit. It lowered the branch to her, and she took one of the fruits. She turned it in her tiny hands and began to eat. How I wished I had the power to enter that bright light and float with her through those beautiful forests. Suddenly, I realized I had fallen in love with this tiny creature. I loved someone who would never love me back, someone who was a prisoner in a drop of water. I ran out of the room, threw myself on my bed, and cried till I fell asleep. Day after day, I returned to my microscope to watch her. I never left my apartment. I rarely even ate or slept. One day, as usual, I went to my microscope, ready to watch my love. She was there, but a terrible change had taken place. Her face had become thin, and she could hardly walk. The wonderful light in her golden hair and blue eyes was gone. At that moment, I would have given my soul to become as small as she and enter her world to help her. What was causing her to be so sick? She seemed in great pain. I watched her for hours, helpless and alone with my breaking heart. She grew weaker and weaker. The forest also was changing. The trees were losing their wonderful colors. Suddenly, I realized I had not looked at the drop of water for several days. I had looked into it with the microscope, but not at it. As soon as I looked at the glass under the microscope, I understood the horrible truth. I had forgotten to add more oil to the drop of water to stop it from drying. The drop of water had disappeared. I rushed again to look through the lens. The rainbow forests were all gone. My love lay in a spot of weak light. Her pink body was dried and wrinkled. Her eyes were black as dust. Slowly, she disappeared forever. I fainted and woke many hours later on pieces of my microscope. I had fallen on it when I fainted. My mind was as broken as the diamond lens. I crawled to my bed and withdrew from the world. When I finally got better, months later, all my money was gone. People now say I am crazy. They call me Linley, the mad scientist. No one believes I spoke to the spirit of Leeuwenhoek. They laugh when I tell them how I killed Jules Simon and stole his diamond to make the perfect lens. They think I never saw that beautiful world in a drop of water. But I know the truth of the diamond lens. And now, so do you.
I'm Katie Weaver with Learning English on the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us.